Tara Road by Maeve Binchy. Read by Kate Binchy. Chapter 1. Rhea's mother had always been very fond of film stars. It was a matter of sadness to her that Clark Gable had died on the day Rhea was born. Tyrone Power had died on the day Hillary had been born just 2 years earlier. But somehow that wasn't as bad. Hillary hadn't seen off the great king of cinema as Rhea had. Rhea could never see Gone with the Wind without feeling somehow guilty. She told this to Ken Murray, the first boy who kissed her. She told him in the cinema, just as he was kissing her, in fact. "You're very boring," he said, trying to open her blouse. "I'm not boring," Rhea cried with some spirit. "Clark Gable is there on the screen, and I've told you something interesting, a coincidence. It's not boring." Ken Murray was embarrassed, as so much attention had been called to them. People were shushing them and others were laughing. Ken moved away and huddled down in his seat, as if he didn't want to be seen with her. Rhea could have kicked herself. She was almost 16. Everyone at school liked kissing, or said they did. Now she was starting to do it, and she'd made such a mess of it. She reached out her hand for him. "I thought you wanted to look at the film," he muttered. "I thought you wanted to put your arm around me," Rhea said hopefully. He took out a bag of toffees and ate one, without even passing her the bag. The romantic bit was over. Sometimes you could talk to Hillary, Rhea had noticed. This wasn't one of those nights. "Should you not talk when people kiss you?" she asked her sister. "Oh, Jesus, Mary and Holy St. Joseph," said Hillary, who was getting dressed to go out. "I just asked," Rhea said. "You know, with all your experience with fellas." Hillary looked around nervously in case anyone had heard. "Will you shut up about my experience with fellas?" she hissed. "Mam will hear you, and that'll put pay to either of us going anywhere ever again." Their mother had warned them many times that she wasn't going to stand for any cheap behaviour in the family. A widow woman left with two daughters had enough to worry her without thinking that her girls were tramps and would never get a husband. She would die happy if Hillary and Rhea had nice, respectable men and homes of their own, nice homes in a classier part of Dublin, places with a garden even. Nora Johnson had great hopes that they would all be able to move a little upwards, somewhere nicer than the big, sprawling housing estate where they lived now. And the way to find a good man wasn't by flaunting yourself at every man that came along. "Sorry, Hillary," Rhea looked contrite. "But anyway, she didn't hear. She's looking at telly." Their mother did little else of an evening. She was tired, she said, when she got back from the dry cleaners where she worked at the counter. All day on your feet, it was nice to sit down and get transported to another world. Mam wouldn't have heard anything untoward about experience with fellas from upstairs. Hillary forgave her. After all, she needed Rhea to help her tonight. Mam had a system that as soon as Hillary got in, she was to leave her handbag on the landing floor. That way, when Mam got up to go to the bathroom in the night, she'd know Hillary was home and would go to sleep happily. Sometimes it was Rhea's job to leave the handbag out there at midnight, allowing Hillary to creep in at any hour, having taken only her keys and lipstick in her pocket. "Who'll do it for me when the time comes?" Rhea wondered. "You won't need it if you're going to be blabbing and yattering on to fellas when they try to kiss you," Hillary said. "You'll not want to stay out late because you'll have nowhere to go." "I bet I will," Rhea said, but she didn't feel as confident as she sounded. There was a stinging behind her eyes. She was sure she didn't look too bad. Her friends at school said she was very lucky to have all that dark curly hair and blue eyes. She wasn't fat or anything, and her spots weren't out of control. But people didn't pick her out. She didn't have the kind of sparkle like other girls in the class did. Hillary saw her despondent face. "Listen, you're fine. You've got naturally curly hair. That's a plus for a start. And you're small. Fellas like that. It'll get better. 16 is the worst age, no matter what they tell you." Sometimes Hillary could be very nice indeed, usually on the night she wanted her handbag left on the landing. And, of course, Hillary was right. It did get better. Rhea left school and, like her elder sister, did a secretarial course. There were plenty of fellas, it turned out. Nobody particularly special, but she wasn't in any rush. She would travel the world, possibly, before she settled down to marry. Not too much travelling, her mother warned. Nora Johnson thought that men might regard travel as fast. Men preferred to marry safer, calmer women. Women who didn't go gallivanting too much. It was only sensible to have advance information about men, Nora Johnson told her daughters. That way you could go armed into the struggle. There was a hint that she may not have been adequately informed herself. The late Mr. Johnson, though he had a bright smile and wore his hat at a rakish angle, was not a good provider. He hadn't been a believer in nor a subscriber to life insurance policies. Nora Johnson didn't want the same thing for her daughters when the time came. When do you think the time will come? Rhea asked Hillary. For what? Hillary was frowning a lot at her reflection in the mirror. The thing about applying blusher was that you had to get it just right. Too much and you looked consumptive. Too little and you looked dirty and as if you hadn't washed your face. I mean, when do you think either of us will get married? You know the way Mam's always talking about when the time comes. Well, I hope it comes to me first. I'm the eldest. You're not even to consider doing it ahead of me. No, I've nobody in mind. It's just I'd love to be able to look into the future and see where we'll be in 2 years' time. Wouldn't it be great if we could have a peep? Well, go to a fortune teller then if you're that anxious. They don't know anything, Rhea was scornful. It depends. If you get the right one, they do. A lot of the girls at work found this great one. It'd make you shiver the way she knows things. You've never been to her? Rhea was astounded. Yes, I have actually, just for fun. The others were all going. I didn't want to be the only one disapproving. And what? What did she tell you? Oh, don't be mean. Go on. Rhea's eyes were dancing. She said I would marry within 2 years. Great. Can I be bridesmaid? And that I'd live in a place surrounded by trees, and that his name began with an M, and that we'd both have good health all our lives. Michael, Matthew, Morris, Marcello. Rhea rolled them all around to try them out. How many children? She said no children, Hillary said. You don't believe her, do you? Of course I do. What's the point of giving up a week's wages if I don't believe her? You never paid that. She's good. You know she has the gift. Come on. No, she does have a gift. All kinds of high-up people consult her. They wouldn't if she didn't have the power. And where did she see all this good health and the fella called M and no children? In tea leaves? No, on my hand. Look at the little lines under your little finger around the side of your hand. You've got two. I've got none. Hillary, don't be ridiculous. Mam has three lines. And remember, there was another baby who died, so that makes three, right? You are serious. You do believe it. Well, you asked, so I'm telling you. And everyone who's going to have children has those little lines, and those who aren't haven't. You have to know how to look, Hillary was defensive. You have to know how to charge, it seems. Rhea was distressed to see the normally level-headed Hillary so easily taken in. It's not that, dear, when you consider, Hillary began. Ah, Hillary, please. A week's wages to hear that kind of rubbish? Where does she live, in a penthouse? No. A caravan, as it happens, on a halting site. You're joking me. True, she doesn't care about money. It's not a racket or a job. It's a gift. Yeah. So it looks like I can do what I like without getting pregnant. Hillary sounded very confident. It might be dangerous to throw out the pill, said Rhea. I wouldn't rely totally on Madame Fifi or whatever she's called. Mrs. Connor. Mrs. Connor, Rhea repeated, isn't that amazing? Mam used to consult St. Anne or someone when she was young. We thought that was mad enough, and now it's Mrs. Connor in the halting site. Wait until you need to know something. You'll be along to her in a flash. It was very hard to know what a job was going to be like until you were in it, and then it was too late. Hilary had office jobs in a bakery, a laundry, and then settled in a school. There wasn't much chance of meeting a husband there, she said, but the pay was a bit better, and she got her lunch free, which meant that she could save a bit more. She was determined to have something to put towards a house when the time came. Ria was saving too, but to travel the world. She worked first in the office of a hardware shop, then in a company which made hairdressing supplies, and then settled in a big, busy estate agency. Ria was on the reception desk and answered the phone. It was a world she knew nothing of when she went in, but it was obviously a business with a huge buzz. Prosperity had come to Ireland in the early 80s, and the property market was the first to reflect this. There was huge competition between the various estate agents, and Ria found they worked closely as a team. On the first day, she met Rosemary. Slim, blonde, and gorgeous, but as friendly as any of the girls she'd ever met at school or secretarial college. Rosemary also lived at home with her mother and sister, so there was an immediate bond. Rosemary was so confident and well up in everything that was happening, Ria assumed she must be a graduate or someone with huge knowledge of the property market. But no, Rosemary had only worked there for 6 months. It was her second job. "There's no point in working anywhere unless we know what it's all about," Rosemary said. "It makes it twice as interesting if you know all that's going on." It also made Rosemary twice as interesting to all the fellas who worked there. They found it very difficult to get to first base with her. In fact, Ria had heard there was a sweepstake being run secretly on who'd be the first to score. Rosemary had heard this too. She and Ria laughed over it. "It's only a game," Rosemary said. "They don't really want me at all." Ria wasn't sure that she was right. Almost any man in the office would have been proud to escort Rosemary Ryan. But she was adamant. A career first, fellas later. Ria listened with interest. It was such a different message from the one she got at home, where her mother and Hilary seemed to put much greater emphasis on the marriage side of things. Ria's mother said that 1982 was a terrible year for film stars dying. Ingrid Bergman died, and Romy Schneider, and Henry Fonda, and then there was the terrible accident where Princess Grace was killed. All the people you really wanted to see, they were dying off like flies. It was also the year that Hilary Johnson got engaged to Martin Moran, a teacher at the school where she worked in the office. Martin was pale and anxious and originally from the west of Ireland. He always said his father was a small farmer, not just a farmer, but a small one. Since Martin was 6'1", it was hard to imagine this. He was courteous and obviously very fond of Hilary, yet there was something about him that lacked enthusiasm and fire. He looked slightly worried about things and spoke pessimistically when he came to the house for Sunday lunch. There was a problem connected with everything. The Pope would get assassinated when he visited England, Martin was sure of it, and when he didn't it was just lucky, and his visit hadn't done all the good that people had hoped it would. The war in the Falklands would have repercussions for Ireland, mark his word, and the trouble in the Middle East was going to get worse. And the IRA bombs in London were only the tip of the iceberg. Teacher salaries were too low. House prices were too high. Ria looked at the man her sister was going to marry with wonder. Hilary, who'd once been able to throw away a week's salary on a fortune teller, was now talking about the cost of having shoes repaired and the folly of making a telephone call outside the cheap times. Eventually a selection was made and a deposit was paid on a very small house. It was impossible to imagine what the area might look like in the future. At present it was full of mud, cement mixers, diggers, unfinished roads and unmade footpaths. And yet it seemed exactly what her elder sister wanted out of life. Never had Ria seen her looking so happy. Hilary was always smiling and holding Martin's hand as they talked, even on very worrying subjects like stamp duty and auctioneer's fees. She kept turning and examining the very small diamond which had been very carefully chosen and bought from a jeweller where Martin's cousin worked, so that a good price had been arranged. Hilary was excited about the wedding, which would be 2 days before her 24th birthday. For Hilary, the time had come. She celebrated it by manic frugality. She and Martin vied with each other to save money on the whole project. A winter wedding was much more sensible. Hilary could wear a cream-coloured suit and hat, something that could be worn again and again, and eventually dyed a dark colour and worn still further. As a wedding feast, they would have a small lunch in a Dublin hotel, just family. Martin's father and brothers, being small farmers, couldn't afford to be away from the land for any longer than a day. It'd be impossible to be anything but pleased for her. It was so obviously what Hilary wanted. But Rhea knew it was nothing at all like what she wanted for herself. Rhea wore a bright scarlet coat to the wedding and a red velvet hairband and bow in her black curly hair. She must have been one of the most colourful bridesmaids at the drabbest wedding in Europe, she thought. When Monday came, she decided to wear her scarlet bridesmaid's coat to the office. Rosemary was amazed.
Hey, you look terrific. I've never seen you dressed up before, Rhea. Seriously, you should get interested in clothes, you know. What a pity we have nowhere to go to lunch and show you off. We mustn't waste this. Come on, Rosemary, it's only clothes.
Rhea was embarrassed. She felt now that she must have been dressed like a tramp before.
No, I'm not joking. You must always wear those knock-them-dead colours. I bet you were the hit of the wedding.
I'd like to think so, but maybe I was a bit too loud, made them colour-blind.
You've no idea what Martin's people were like.
Like Martin? Rosemary guessed.
Compared to them, Martin's a ball of fire, Rhea said. Look, I can't believe you're the same person as yesterday.
Rosemary stood in her immaculate lilac-coloured knitted suit, her makeup perfect and amazed admiration written all over her.
Well, you've really put it up to me. Now I'll have to get a whole new wardrobe.
Rhea twirled round once more before taking off her scarlet coat and caught the eye of the new man in the office. She'd heard there was a Mr. Lynch coming from the Cork branch. He had obviously arrived. He wasn't tall, about her own height. He was handsome, and he had blue eyes and straight fair hair that fell into his eyes. He had a smile that lit up the room.
"Hello, I'm Danny Lynch," he said.
Rhea looked at him, embarrassed to have been caught pirouetting around in her new coat.
"Aren't you just gorgeous?" he said.
She felt a very odd sensation in her throat, as if she'd been running up a hill and couldn't catch her breath. Rosemary spoke, which was just as well, because Rhea wouldn't have been able to answer at all.
"Well, hello there, Danny Lynch," she said with a bit of a smile. "And you are very welcome to our office. You know, we were told that there was a Mr. Lynch arriving, but why did we think it was going to be some old guy?"
Rhea felt a pang of jealousy she'd never before felt about her friend. Why did Rosemary always know exactly what to say, how to be funny and flattering and warm at the same time?
"I'm Rosemary, this is Rhea, and we are the workforce that keeps this place going, so you will have to be very nice to us."
"Oh, I will," Danny promised.
And Rhea knew that he would probably join the sweepstake as to who would score first with Rosemary. Probably would win as well. Oddly, he seemed to be talking to Rhea when he spoke, but maybe she was just imagining it. Rosemary went on.
"We were just looking for somewhere to go out and celebrate Rhea's new coat."
"Great. Well, we have the excuse. All we need is the place and to know how long a lunch break so that I don't make a bad impression on my first day."
His extraordinary smile went from one to the other. They were the only three people in the world. Rhea couldn't say anything. Her mouth was too dry.
"If we're out and back in under an hour, then I think we'll do well," said Rosemary.
"So now it's only where?"
Danny Lynch said, looking straight at Rhea. This time there were only two of them in the world. She still couldn't speak.
"There's an Italian place across the road," Rosemary said. "It had cut down on time getting there and back."
"Let's go there,"
said Danny Lynch, without taking his eyes away from Rhea Johnson. Danny was 23. His uncle had been an auctioneer,
Well, he'd been a bit of everything in a small town, a publican, an undertaker, but he also had an auctioneer's license, and that's where Danny had gone to work when he left school. They'd sold grain and fertilizer and hay, as well as cattle and small farms. But as Ireland changed, property became important. And then he'd gone to Cork City, and he loved it all, and now he had just got this job in Dublin.
He was as excited as a child on Christmas Day, and Rosemary and Ria were carried along with him all the way. He said he hated being in the office and loved being out with the clients, but then didn't everyone? He knew it would take time before he'd get that kind of freedom in Dublin. He'd been to Dublin often, but never lived there.
And where was he staying? Rosemary had never seemed so interested in anyone before.
Ria watched, glumly. Every man in the office would have killed to see the light in the eyes and the interest in every word.
Rosemary never inquired where any of her other colleagues lived. She didn't seem to know if they had any accommodation at all. But with Danny it was different.
Oh, tell us now that you don't live miles and miles away, do you?
Rosemary had her head on one side. No man on earth could resist giving Rosemary his address and finding out where she lived too.
But Danny didn't seem to regard it as a personal exchange. It was part of the general conversation. He spoke, looking from one to the other, as he told them how he had fallen on his feet. He'd really had the most amazing bit of luck. There was this man he'd met, a sort of madman, really, called Sean O'Brien, old and confused, a real recluse. And he'd inherited a great big house in Tara Road, and he wasn't capable of doing it up, and he didn't want all the bother and the discussing of it and all. So what he really wanted was a few fellas to go in and live there. The fellas were easier than girls. They didn't want things neat and clean and organised. Danny smiled apologetically at them, as if to say he knew that fellas were hopeless. So that's where Danny and two other lads lived. They had a bedsitter each, and kept an eye on the place, until poor old Sean decided what he was going to do. Suited everybody.
What kind of a house was it, the girls wanted to know?
Tara Road was very higgledy-piggledy. Big houses with gardens full of trees, small houses facing right onto the street. Number 16 was a great old house, Danny said. Falling down, damp, shabby now. Poor old Sean O'Brien's old uncle must have been a bit of a no-hoper like Sean himself, but it must have been a great house once. You got a feel for houses, didn't you? Otherwise, why be in this business at all?
Ria sat with her chin in her hands, listening to Danny and looking at him and looking at him. He was so enthusiastic. The place had a big overrun garden at the back. It was one of those houses that just put out its arms and hugged you. Rosemary must have kept the conversation going and called for the bill. They walked across the road back to work, and Ria sat down at her desk.
Things don't happen like this in real life. It's only a crush or an infatuation. He's a perfectly ordinary small guy with a line of chatter. He's exactly like this to everyone else. So why on earth did she feel that he was so special and that if he got to share all his plans and dreams with anyone else, she would kill the other person? This wasn't the kind of way people went on. Then she remembered her sister's wedding 2 days ago. That wasn't the way people went on either.
Before the office closed, Ria went over to Danny Lynch's desk.
I'm going to be 22 tomorrow, she said. I wondered...
And then she got stuck. He helped her out.
Are you having a party?
Not really, no.
Then can we celebrate it together? Today the coat, tomorrow being 22? Who knows what we'll have to celebrate by Wednesday?
And then Ria knew that it wasn't a crush or an infatuation. It was love. The kind of thing that she'd only read about, heard about, sung about, or seen at the cinema. And it had come to find her in her own office. At first, Ria tried to keep Danny to herself, not wanting to tell anyone about him or share him with other people. She clung to him when they said goodbye, as if she never wanted him to leave her arms.
You're sending me very funny signals, my Maria, he said to her. You want to be with me, and yet you don't? Or am I just a sick man who can't understand?
His head was on one side, looking at her quizzically.
That's exactly the way I feel, she said simply. Very confused.
Well, we can simplify it all, can't we?
Not really. You see, for me, It would be a very big step. I don't want to make a production out of it all, but you see, I haven't with anyone else. Yet, I mean.
She bit her lip. She didn't dare tell him that she wouldn't sleep with him until she knew that he loved her. It would be putting words in his mouth. Danny Lynch held her face in his hands.
I love you, Rhea. You are utterly adorable.
Do you love me?
You know I do.
The next time he asked her to go back to the big rambling house, she would go.
But oddly, he didn't ask her at all in the days and nights that followed. He told her about himself, his time at school where he was picked on because he was small, and how his elder brothers had taught him to fight. His brothers were in London, both of them, one married, one living with a girl. They didn't come home much, usually went to Spain or Greece on their holidays now. His parents lived in the same house as they had always done. They were very self-contained, went for long walks with their red setter.
She felt that he didn't get on well with his father, but even though Rhea ached to ask, she didn't probe. Men hated that kind of intimate chat. She and Rosemary knew this from reading magazine articles, and even from their own experience. Fellas didn't like being questioned about feelings. So she didn't ask him about his childhood and why he spoke so little of his parents and rarely went to see them. Danny didn't ask questions about her family, so she forced herself not to prattle about how her father had died when she was 8, how her mother was still bitter and disappointed by the memory of him, and how dull Hilary and Martin's wedding had been. There was no shortage of things to talk about in those heady days. Danny did ask about what music she liked and what she read and where she'd been on holidays and what films she went to see and what kind of houses she liked. He showed her books about houses and pointed out things that she would never have noticed. He'd love to own the old house, number 16 Tara Road, he told her. He would do it up and take such care of it. He would put so much love into the house that the house would return his love. It was wonderful having Rosemary to talk to. At first, Rhea held back. She was so afraid that if Rosemary smiled just once more, Danny would leave Rhea's side and join her. But as the days went by, she began to have a little more confidence. And then she told Rosemary everything, where they went, what he was interested in, about his strange, lonely family in the country. Rosemary listened with interest.
You've got it very bad, she said eventually. Do you think it's foolish? Just a crush or something. You know a lot about these things.
Rhea wished for an oval face and high cheekbones so desperately it almost hurt.
He seems to have it just as bad, Rosemary pronounced. He says he loves me, certainly, Rhea said. She was answering Rosemary's question, but she didn't want to sound too confident.
Of course he loves you. That was obvious the very first day, Rosemary said, twirling her long blonde hair around her finger.
It's the most romantic thing I've ever seen. I can't tell you how envious we all are. Total love at first sight. And the whole office knows.
What nobody knows is, are you sleeping with him?
No, said Rhea firmly, and then in a much smaller voice.
Not yet.
Rhea's mother wondered when she was ever going to meet him.
Soon, ma'am. Don't rush things, please.
I'm not rushing anything, Rhea. I'm just pointing out that you've been going out with this fella every single night, week after week, and common courtesy would suggest that you might invite him home with you once in a while.
I will, ma'am, honestly.
I mean, Hilary brought Martin back to meet us, didn't she?
Oh, she did, ma'am.
So?
So I will.
Are you going home for Christmas? Rhea asked Danny.
Here's home.
He embraced all of Dublin in a gesture.
Yes, I know. I meant your parents' home.
I don't know yet.
Won't they expect you to go back?
They'll leave it all to me.
She wanted to ask about his brothers over in England, and what kind of a family was it if they didn't all gather around a table for a turkey on Christmas Day? But she knew she mustn't sound too inquisitive.
Sure, she said unconvincingly.
Danny took both her hands in his.
Listen to me, Rhea. It'll be different when you and I have a home. It'll be a real home. One that people will want to come running back to. That's what I see ahead for us. Don't you?
Oh, yes, Danny, she said with her face glowing.
She did understand. The real Danny was a loving person like herself. She was the luckiest woman in the world.
Ask him for Christmas Day so that we can get a look at him, her mother begged.
No, ma'am, thank you, but no. Is he going back down the country to his own people? I'm not sure. He's not sure.
He sounds a real fly-by-night to me, her mother sniffed.
No, ma'am, he's not that.
Well, a mystery man. He won't even put in an appearance to give the time of day to his girlfriend's family.
He will, ma'am, when the time comes, Rhea said.
Someone always behaved badly at the office party. This year it was Orla King, a girl who'd drunk half a bottle of vodka before the festivities had even started. She tried to sing, "In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight."
Get her out before the top guys see her, Danny hissed.
It was easier said than done. Rhea tried to urge Orla to come on with her to the ladies' room.
Piss off, was the response.
Danny was there.
Hey, sweetheart, you and I have never danced, he said.
She looked at him with interest.
That's true, she agreed.
Well, why don't we go out and dance a bit where there's more room?
Yes, said the girl, surprised and pleased.
In seconds, Danny had her out on the street. Rhea brought her coat. The cold, fresh air made her feel sick. They directed her to a quiet corner.
I want to go home, she cried afterwards.
Come on, we'll walk you, Danny said.
Between them, they supported her. From time to time, Orla tried a chorus of "The Lion Sleeps Tonight" without much success. When they let her in the door of her flat, she looked at them in surprise.
How did I get home?
She asked with interest.
You're fine, sweetheart, Danny said soothingly.
Will you come in with me?
Orla ignored Rhea entirely.
No, honey, see you tomorrow, he said, and they were gone.
You saved her job getting her out of there, Rhea said as they walked back to the office party.
She's such a clown. Hope she knows how much she owes you.
She's not a clown. She's just young and lonely, he said.
Rhea got a stab of jealousy, as sharp as a real pain. Orla was 18 and pretty. Even drunk and with a tear-stained face, she looked well. Suppose Danny was attracted to her. No, don't suppose that. Back at the party, they hadn't been missed.
That was very smart of you, Danny, Rosemary said with approval. And even smarter, you missed the speeches.
Anything we should know?
Oh, that we had a profitable year and that there would be a bonus. Onwards and upwards sort of thing.
Rosemary looked magnificent, with her blonde hair swept up in a big jewelled comb, a white satin blouse, tight black skirt, and those long, slim legs. For the second time that evening, Rhea felt a pang of envy. She was dumpy and fuzzy looking. How could she keep a man as gorgeous as Danny Lynch? She was foolish even to try. He whispered in her ear,
"Let's circulate. Talk to the suits for a bit. And then get away."
She watched him joke easily with the senior figures in the agency, nod respectfully to the managing director, listen courteously to their wives. Danny had only been there a matter of weeks. Already they liked him and thought he would do well.
"I'm getting the Christmas Eve bus tomorrow."
"I'm sure it'll be nice. Lots of returned emigrants and everything," she said.
"I'll miss you," he said.
"Me too."
"I'll hitchhike back the day after Christmas. There's no buses."
"That's great."
"I wonder, could I come and see you at home and, you know, meet your mother maybe?"
He was asking. She hadn't dragged him or forced him.
"That'd be great. Come and have lunch with us on the Tuesday."
All she had to do now was force herself not to be ashamed of her mother and sister and her dreary brother-in-law.
It wasn't a military inspection on Tuesday, it was only lunch. They were going to have soup and sandwiches. Rhea tried to see their home through Danny's eyes. It wasn't the kind of place he would have liked to live, a corner house on a long road of the big estate.
"He's coming to see me, not the house," she told herself.
Her mother said she hoped he wouldn't stay after three because there was a great movie starting on the television then. Rhea gritted her teeth and said no, indeed, she was sure that he wouldn't. Hilary said she was sure he was used to fancier meals, but he'd have to put up with this like anyone else. With a huge effort, Rhea said he would be delighted to put up with it.
Martin read the paper and didn't look up at all. She wondered, would Danny bring a bottle of wine or a box of chocolates or a plant? Or maybe nothing at all. 3 times she changed her dress. That was too smart, this was too dowdy. She was struggling into the 3rd outfit when she heard the doorbell ring. He'd arrived.
"Hello, Nora, I'm Danny," she heard him say.
Oh, God, he was calling her mother by her first name. Martin always called her Mrs. J. Mam would just hate this. But she heard in her mother's voice the kind of pleased response that Danny always got.
"You're very, very welcome," she said, in a tone that hadn't been used in that house for as long as Rhea could remember.
And the magic worked with Hilary and Martin, too. Eager to hear about their wedding, interested in the school where they worked, relaxed and easygoing, Rhea watched the whole thing in amazement. And he had brought no wine, chocolates or flowers. Instead, he gave them a game of Trivial Pursuit. Rhea's heart sank when she saw it. This wasn't a family where games were played, but she'd reckoned without Danny. Their heads were bent over the questions. Nora knew all the ones about film stars, and Martin shone in general knowledge.
"Oh, what hope have I against a teacher?" Danny groaned in despair.
He said he was leaving long before they wanted him to go.
"Rhea promised to come and see the place I live," he said apologetically. "I want us to go while there's still light."
"He's gorgeous," Hilary whispered. "Very nice manners," her mother hissed.
And then they were free.
"That was a lovely lunch," Danny said as they waited for the bus to Tara Road.
And that was all he would say. There would be no analysis, no defining. Men like Danny were straightforward and not complicated. And then they were there. And they stood together in the overgrown front garden and looked up at the house in Tara Road.
"Look at the shape of the house," Danny begged her. "See how perfect the proportions are. It was built in 1870, a gentleman's residence."
The steps up to the hall door were huge blocks of granite.
"Look how even they were. They were perfectly matched. The bay windows had all the original woodwork. Those shutters are over 100 years old. The leaded glass over the door has no cracks in it. This house was a jewel," Danny Lynch said.
And there he was, living in it. Well, more or less camping in a room in it.
"Let's remember today, the first day that we walked together into this house," he said.
His eyes were bright. He was just as sentimental and romantic as she was in so many ways. He was about to open the peeling front door with his key and paused to kiss her.
"This will be our home, Rhea, won't it? Tell me you love it too."
He meant it. He wanted to marry her. Danny Lynch, a man who could have any woman, and he meant he was going to own a huge house like this. A boy of 23 with no assets. Only rich people could buy houses like this, even one in such poor repair. Rhea didn't want to pour cold water on his dreams, and particularly she didn't want to sound too like her sister Hilary with her new obsession with the cost of everything. But this was fantasy.
"It's not possible to own a place like this, surely," she said.
"When you come in and see it, you'll know this is where we are going to live, and we'll find a way to buy it."
He talked her through the hallway with its high ceiling. He pointed out the original mouldings on the ceiling to take her eyes off the bicycles clogging the hallway. He showed her the gentle curve of the stairs and made no mention of the rotting floorboards. They passed the big room with its folding doors. They couldn't go into it. Sean O'Brien, the eccentric landlord, was using it as some kind of storeroom for giant-sized containers. They went down the steps to the huge kitchen with its old black range. There was a side door here out to the garden and numerous storage rooms, pantries and sculleries. The magnitude of it all was too great for Rhea to take in. This boy with the laughing eyes really thought that he and she could find the money and skills to do up a house of this size. If it were on their books back at the office, it would have the customary warnings printed all over it. In need of extensive renovation, suitable for structural remodeling, ready for inventive redesign. Only a builder or developer or someone with real money would buy a property like this. The kitchen had an uneven tiled floor. A small, cheap tabletop cooker had been laid on the old black range.
I'll make us some coffee, Danny said. And in years to come, we'll remember the first time we had coffee here together in Tara Road.
At that moment, as if on some kind of cue, the kitchen was suddenly lit up with one of those rays of watery winter sunshine. It came slanting in at the window, through all the briars and brambles. It was like a sign. Yes, yes, I will remember my first coffee with you in Tara Road, Rhea said.
We'll be able to tell people it was a lovely sunny day, December the 28th, 1982.
Danny. As it happened, it also turned out to be the date of the first time Rhea Johnson ever made love to anybody. And as she lay beside Danny in the small narrow bed, she wished she could see into the future, just for a moment. A quick look to see would they live here together for years and have children and make it the home of their dreams. She wondered if Hillary's friend, Mrs. Connor, the fortune teller on the halting site, would know. She smiled at the thought of going to consult her. Danny stirred from his sleep on her shoulder and saw her smiling.
Are you happy? He asked.
Never more so.
I love you, Rhea.
I'll never let you down, he promised.
She was the luckiest woman in the country. No, she told herself. Think generously. Who was luckier anywhere? Make that the world. The next weeks went by in a blur. They knew that Sean O'Brien would be glad to get rid of the place. They knew that he would prefer to deal with them, young people who wouldn't make a fuss about the damp and the roof and wouldn't tut-tut over the decay. But they still had to give him what the house was worth. So how could they get it together? There were sheets of paper building up into piles as they did their sums. Four bedsitters upstairs would bring in enough to pay the mortgage. It'd have to be done very quietly, of course. No need to burden the planning authorities with any details, or indeed the tax people either. Then they would approach the bank with their proposition. Rhea had £1,000 saved. Danny had 2,500. They had both seen couples with less than they had get their hands on property. It all depended on timing and presentation. They would do it. They invested the price of a bottle of whiskey when inviting the landlord to discuss the future. Sean O'Brien proved to be no trouble. He told them again and again the story they knew already. He had inherited the house when his uncle died some years back. He didn't want to live in it. He had a small cottage by a lake in Wicklow where he fished and drank with congenial people. That's where he wanted to be. He'd only held on to Tara Road in case there was going to be a property boom. And indeed there had been. It was worth much more now than it had been 10 years ago, so he'd been clever, hadn't he? A lot of people said he was an idiot, but that wasn't so. Danny and Rhea nodded and praised him and filled his glass. Sean O'Brien said he'd never been able to keep the house up to any standard. It was too much effort, and he didn't have the skills to restore it and let it properly to people who would look after it. That was why he'd been happy to hand it to young fellas like Danny and his pals. But he took their point that it wasn't going to be such a great investment if it kept falling down and deteriorating the way it was. He thought that the going rate would be in the neighbourhood of £70,000. He had asked around and this is what he'd heard. However, he would take £60,000 for a quick sale. And he'd get rid of all the old furniture and containers and boxes that he was storing for friends. Danny could have it when he produced £60,000. It would have been a bargain for anyone with the money to restore it. For Danny and Rhea, it was impossible. For a start, they'd need 15% of the price as the deposit. And £9,000 was like £9 million to them. Rhea was prepared to change the dream, not Danny. He didn't fret or complain. He just wouldn't let go of the idea. It was too good a house, too beautiful a place to let slip from their hands into the possession of some builder. Now that Sean O'Brien had faced the notion of selling, he would want to sell. It was hard to keep their minds on the sales they had to handle in the office. Doubly hard, because every day they were dealing with people who could buy Tara Road without any trouble at all. People like Barney McCarthy, for example. the big bluff businessman who'd made his money in England as a builder and who bought and sold houses almost on a whim. He was in the process of selling a large mansion that had been a mistake, one of his rare mistakes. Barney was unexpectedly honest as to why it was a mistake. He had seen himself momentarily as a country squire, living in a huge Georgian house with a tree-lined avenue. The house was indeed elegant, but it turned out to be too remote, too far from Dublin. It had been an ill-considered decision, and he was prepared to lose a little on the whole deal, but not a lot. He needed to sell this white elephant. He had already bought the comfortable, big, square family residence that he should have bought in the first place. His wife was settled there. He was involved in buying pubs and investing in golf courses. But the issue that was uppermost was to sell the mansion, which now seemed just like a monument to his folly. He was a man who cared about the public image of himself.
He also loved to drop the names of famous people he had met. And in the estate agency, they were greatly in awe of him.
But they had a huge problem in selling this property at anything like the price he expected. Quite simply, Barney had spent too much on it, and there just weren't the buyers. He wasn't going to see a profit. And he was a man who'd hate to take a humiliating loss on a deal. Senior partners in the estate agency, smooth-talking men, pointed out to Barney that the upkeep of such a house was enormous and that they could count on the fingers of one hand the likely buyers in Ireland. They had looked outside the country too, but with no success. There was a conference in the agency about it. Danny and Rhea sat with the others, listening to the worrying news that Barney might be taking his business elsewhere. Rhea's mind was far from Barney's problems and more on their own. But Danny was thinking. He opened his mouth to say something, and then changed his mind.
"What is it, Danny?"
He was popular and successful. They wanted to hear what he would say.
"No, it's nothing. You've thought of all the angles," Danny said.
And the conversation went around aimlessly in the same circle for another half an hour. Rhea knew that Danny had thought of something. She knew from the way his eyes danced. After the meeting, he whispered that he had to get out of the office. She was to cover for him.
"If you pray to anyone, pray now," he said.
"Tell me, Danny, tell me."
"I can't. There isn't time. Say I got a phone call from the nuns down the road. Anything."
"I can't sit here and not know."
"I've got an idea how Barney can sell his house."
"Why didn't you tell them?"
"I'm telling him. That's how we'll get our money. If I tell them, we'll only get a pat on the back."
"Oh, God, Danny, be careful. They could sack you."
"If I'm right, it won't matter," he said. And he was gone.
Rosemary called Rhea.
"Come into the ladies' room. I want to tell you something."
I can't. I'm waiting for a call."
Rhea couldn't leave her post in case he rang or needed her cooperation.
"Orla can cover for you. Come on, it's important," Rosemary said.
"No, tell me here. There's no one around."
"Well, it's very hush-hush.
Speak in a whisper, then."
"I'm leaving. I've got a new job."
Rosemary pulled back, waiting to see the amazement and shock on Rhea's face. She saw very little reaction at all. Perhaps she hadn't explained it properly. She explained it all again. It had just been agreed. It was very exciting. She would tell them here in the agency this evening. She'd been offered a better job in a printing company. It wasn't far away. They could still have lunch. Rhea barely listened. She was so sick with worry. Rosemary was not unnaturally offended.
"Well, if you can't be bothered to listen," she said. "I'm sorry, Rosemary, really I am. It's just that I have something on my mind."
"God, you're so bloody dull, Rhea. You've nothing on your mind but Danny this and Danny that. It's like as if you were his mother. Do you know that you haven't the remotest interest in anyone else these days?"
Rhea was stricken.
"Oh, look, I can't tell you how sorry I am. Please forgive me. Tell me again."
"No, I won't tell you again. You don't care if I go or stay. You're still not listening to me. You've your eyes on the door in case he's coming back in. Where is he, by the way?"
"With the nuns. They rang."
"No, they didn't. I was talking to them an hour ago. There's no movement there. They have to wait for some Mother General to say yes from Rome. I'll tell you all about it later. Please, tell me about your new job, please."
"Rhea, will you shut up?"
Rosemary hissed.
I haven't told them yet, and there you go bleating about my new job. I think you're unhinged."
She saw Danny come in by the door, walking quickly, lightly, as he always did. She knew by his face that it was all right. He slid into his desk and gave her a thumbs-up sign. Immediately she dialed his phone extension.
"Don't say you were with the nuns. Apparently there's nothing happening on that sale," she whispered.
"Thanks, you're brilliant."
"What happens now, Danny?"
"We sit tight for a week, then all systems go."
Rhea hung up. She thought the day would never end. The hands of the clock were crawling past. Rosemary went in and came out, having given her notice. Everything seemed to be in slow motion. Across the room, Danny seemed to be perfectly normal in his conversations, chatting to people, laughing, working on the phone. Only Rhea, who knew his every heartbeat, could see the suppressed excitement. They went to the pub across the road, and without asking her what she wanted, he bought them both a large brandy.
"I told Barney McCarthy he should put in a soundproofed recording studio with all that stuff on the walls. Cost him another 20,000.
"Why on earth?"
"He could sell it to pop stars. It's the kind of place they'd want. Carve out a helicopter pad as well."
"And he thought it was a good idea?"
Rhea was weak.
"He asked why did those swanky auctioneers I worked for not come up with this idea."
"What did you say?"
"I said they would probably think it was a bit of a young man's idea, that they were more conservative."
"Andrea, wait for this." I looked him in the eye and I said, "And another thing, Mr. McCarthy, I thought if I came to you directly with this idea that maybe I could sell it for you myself."
Danny sipped his brandy.
"But he asked me, was I trying to take his business away from my employers? And I said, yes, I was. And he said he'd give me a week."
"God, Danny!"
"I know. Isn't it wonderful? Well, we can't do it from their place, so I'll develop flu tomorrow after I've taken all the addresses and contacts I need home. I've begun to make a list already, and then I'll get on the phone. Now, I may need you to send some faxes from the office for me."
"We'll be killed."
"Don't be ridiculous. Of course we won't. This is what business is about."
"How much will..."
"If I sell Barney's bloody house by next week, we'll have the deposit on Tara Road and more. Then we can go to the bank, honey bun. Then we can go to the bank."
"But they'll sack you and you won't have a job."
"If I have Barney McCarthy's business, any auctioneers in Ireland will take me. Just a week of iron hard nerve, Rhea, and we're there."
"Iron nerve," she agreed.
"And remember this day, sweetheart, March the 25th, 1983, the day our luck changed."
"Will Danny be back for my going away drinks?" Rosemary asked Rhea. "Yeah, I think his flu will be better by then," Rhea said loudly. "Sorry, it slipped out. How is he, by the way?" "Fine, he rings at night." Rhea didn't say how often he telephoned during the day, too, asking for information. "And did he find what he's looking for?" Rosemary asked. Rhea thought for a moment. "He sounds cheerful enough. I think he's just in the process of finding it," she said. An hour previously, Danny had rung to say that Barney's forces had soundproofed a wine cellar already and the equipment was being installed today. Tomorrow, the manager of a legendary pop group was flying over to inspect it. Danny would be travelling with him. It was looking very good. And it was very good. Barney McCarthy got his price, and Danny Lynch got his commission, and Sean O'Brien got his £60,000. And Danny told his employers what he had done and that he would leave as soon as they wanted him to. They invited him to stay and keep Barney's business with them, but Danny said it would be awkward. They would always be watching him. He would feel uneasy. They parted on good terms, as Danny Lynch did with everyone and everything in life. They were like excited children as they wandered around the house planning this and that.
"This front room could be something really special," Danny said.
Now that the boxes and containers that held the secrets of poor old Sean O'Brien and his friends had been moved out, Anyone could see what perfect proportions it had, the high ceiling, the tall windows, the big fireplace. It didn't matter at all that a naked light bulb hung on an old knotted flex from the middle of the ceiling, or that some window panes had been broken in the past and replaced with cheap and irregular bits of glass. The stained and chipped mantelpiece could be renewed and made to look as it must once have looked when it was a gentleman's residence. "We'll get a gorgeous soft wool Indian carpet," Danny said. "And look, here, beside the fireplace, do you know what we'll have? One of those big Japanese Imari vases, perfect for a room like this." Rhea looked at him with stunned admiration. "How on earth do you know all this, Danny? You sound as if you'd done a course in fine arts or something."
"I look at places, sweetheart. I'm in and out of houses like this all day. I see what people with taste and style have done. I just look, that's all."
"A lot of people look, but they don't see properly."
"We'll have such a good time doing it up."
His eyes were shining. Rhea nodded, not trusting herself to speak. The excitement of it all was nearly too much for her. Sometimes she felt dizzy, physically dizzy, with the magnitude of what they were taking on. The pregnancy test was positive. The timing couldn't be worse. As she lay awake at night, either in her mother's home or in the shambles that was now Tara Road, she rehearsed how she would tell him that she was pregnant. The fear that he mightn't want the child was so great it stopped her opening her mouth. The days went by and Rhea felt she was acting everywhere and to everyone, and that she had long ceased to be a real person with normal responses. When she did tell him, it was completely by accident. Danny said that the hall was much bigger than they had thought now that they had got the bicycles out of it and into the shed. Maybe they should have a painting party at the weekend, get everyone to do a bit of wall each. It wouldn't be permanent or anything, but it might give them a bit of pride in the place.
"What do you think, sweetheart? I know the smell of paint will make us all sick for a day or so, but it'll be worth it."
"I'm going to have a baby," she said suddenly.
"What?"
"Yes, I mean it. Oh, Jesus, Lanny, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry now in the middle of all this." And she burst into tears.
He laid down his coffee cup and came over to hold her tight.
"Rhea, Rhea, stop. Stop. Don't cry."
But she went on sobbing and shaking in his arms. He stroked her hair and soothed her as you would a child.
"Shh, shh, shh, Rhea. I'm here. It's all right."
"No, it's not all right. It couldn't be worse. What a time for this to happen. I don't know how it happened."
"I do, and it was all lovely," he said.
"Oh, Danny, please don't make a joke about it. It's a nightmare. I've never been so upset. I couldn't tell you, not with all this going on."
"Why is it a nightmare?" he asked.
"Oh, please, please, may he not say that an abortion was no trouble, that he had the money now. They could go to London at the weekend. Please, may he not say that." Because Rhea knew that she didn't trust herself, she might do it just to keep him. Then she would hate him as well as loving him, which would be absurd, but she could see it happening.
He was smiling, his big wide smile. "Where's the nightmare, Rhea? My sweet sweetheart. We wanted children. We were going to get married. So it happened sooner rather than later, that's all."
She looked at him in wonder. Inasmuch as she could understand anything, he really did seem overjoyed.
"Danny!"
"What were all the tears about?"
I thought...
"Shush."
"Rosemary, can we have lunch? I have some marvellous news."
"Oh, what makes me think it has to do with lover boy?" Rosemary laughed.
"Lunch or not?"
"Of course." They went to the Italian restaurant where they'd gone that day with Danny last November. Only a few months ago, but imagine all that had happened since. Rosemary looked better than ever. How it was that no drop of oil or spill of sauce would ever land on her light grey cashmere sweater, Rhea would never know.
"Well, tell me," Rosemary said. "Stop pretending to look at the menu. Danny and I are getting married. We want you to be the bridesmaid."
Rosemary was speechless.
"Yes,
Isn't it wonderful? We own the house, and we thought it silly to wait any longer.
Married? Rosemary said. Well, aren't you the dark horse?
All I can say is, well done, Rhea. Well done.
Rhea felt slightly that she would have preferred Rosemary to say that this was great. Well done sort of implied that she'd won by trickery.
Yes. Aren't you happy for us? Of course I am, Rosemary hugged her. Stunned, but very happy for you. You got the man of your dreams and a beautiful house as well.
Rhea decided to play it down a little.
Oh, there's years of work to get it right. No one else but us would be as mad as to take it on. Nonsense. It's worth a fortune. You and Danny know that. You certainly moved fast on that one. You got the bargain of the century. She spoke with true praise.
Rhea felt a stab of guilt as if they had somehow conned poor Sean O'Brien and given him less than he deserved.
Nobody's seen the house yet but you. I'm almost afraid of what the families will say when they do.
Rhea could see the jealousy in Hilary's face already.
Nonsense, they'll be dead impressed. What are they like, Danny's parents?
I haven't met them yet, but I gather not at all like Danny, Rhea said.
Rosemary made a face.
Still, maybe the brothers are okay. Are they coming home from England? I might make off with one of them. Bridesmaid's privilege, you know.
Oh, no mention of them coming back.
Oh, never mind. I'll find something to entertain me. Now, down to serious things. What will we wear?
Rosemary, what?
You know I'm pregnant.
I thought you might be. Well, that's good, isn't it? It's what you want.
Yes, it is.
So?
So, we shouldn't really be thinking of big white weddings and veils and all that sort of stuff. And anyway, his family is very quiet, low-key. It wouldn't work.
What would Danny like? Isn't that all that matters? Would he like the whole works or a few sandwiches in the pub?
Rhea didn't even pause to think.
He'd like the full works, she said.
Then that is exactly what we'll have, said Rosemary, getting out pen and paper and starting to make a list.
She met Barney McCarthy before she met Danny's parents. She was invited to lunch. In fact, it was a little like a royal command.
Danny was excited. Well, you like him, Rhea. He's marvellous. And he'll love you. I know he will.
I'm nervous of going to that restaurant. It'll be all in French and we won't know what all the things are.
Nonsense. Just be yourself and never apologise or write yourself down. We're as good as anyone else. Barney knows that. That's how he got on, by knowing it about himself.
She noticed with a little stab of worry that Danny seemed more anxious about her meeting with Barney than with his parents.
Oh, we'll go down to them any time, he said.
Nora Johnson was amazed at the news.
You surprise me, she said twice.
Rhea was irritated by this response.
Why do I surprise you, ma'am? You know I love him. You know he loves me. What else would we do but get married?
Oh, certainly, certainly.
What have you against him, ma'am? You said you liked him. You admired the fact that he bought a big house and is planning to do it up. He's got good prospects. We won't be penniless. What objection do you have?
He's too good-looking, her mother said.
Hilary was no more enthusiastic.
You'd want to be careful of him, Rhea. Oh, thanks very much, Hilary. When you were marrying Martin, I didn't say that to you. I said I was delighted for you, and I was sure you were going to be very happy.
But that was true.
Hilary was smug in her excellent choice of a mate.
It's true for me too, Rhea cried. Yes, Rhea, but you'll have to watch him. He's a high flyer. He's not going to be content with earning a living like normal people do. He'll want the moon. It's written all over him.
Danny, who never fussed about anything, went to great trouble discussing what Rhea should wear when meeting Barney McCarthy. Eventually, it made her impatient.
Listen, you were the one who said I should be myself. I'll wear something nice and smart and I'll be myself. It's not a fashion parade or a beauty contest. It's a lunch.
Her eyes flashed with the kind of spirit she hadn't shown for a while. He looked at her admiringly.
Ah, that's my girl. That's the way to go, he said.
She wore the scarlet coat she'd bought for Hilary's wedding and a new silk scarf that Rosemary had helped her to choose. Barney was a large, square man of about 45 in a very well-cut suit. He wore an expensive watch and he carried himself well and confidently. Slightly balding now, he had the face of a working man, someone who had been out in all weathers. He had an easy manner. He was neither impressed by the restaurant nor trying to put it down. They talked effortlessly, all three of them. Still, despite the pleasant, inconsequential conversation, Rhea couldn't avoid the feeling that she was being given an interview. And, with a sense of satisfaction after the coffee, she realized that she had done very well. Orla King was the one who told Rhea that people in the office didn't really like her working there anymore, not now that she was engaged to marry Danny Lynch. People said she'd be telling him everything, giving him leads.
I had no idea, Rhea was shocked. Well, I'm only telling you because you two were very nice to me when I was being in Egypt last Christmas.
Orla was all right. She couldn't help looking so good. Rhea wondered why she had felt so stupidly jealous of her. Danny told Barney McCarthy that Rhea had decided to leave the company, to go before they asked her to. Barney was unexpectedly sympathetic.
Oh, that's very hard on her. She was in that firm long before you went in and rocked the boat.
That's true, Danny said, surprised. He hadn't thought of it that way.
So is she upset?
A little, but you know, Rhea, she's out looking for another job already. He was proud of her.
Oh, maybe I'd have a job for her, said Barney McCarthy.
One of his business interests was a new dress hire firm, a very classy outfit called Polly's. They took Rhea immediately.
Should I not have a week's trial or something? Rhea asked Gertie, the tall, pale manageress with her long dark hair tied in a simple ribbon behind her neck.
No need, said Gertie with a grin. Instructions from Mr. McCarthy to hire you, so you're hired.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's an awful way to come in anywhere, Rhea apologized.
Listen, it's fine, and you're fine, and we'll get along great, said Gertie. I'm only telling it to you the way it is.
They went to see Danny's parents. It was a 3-hour journey by bus. Rhea felt very sick, but forced herself to be in good spirits. Danny's father waited in the square where the bus came in. He drove an old shabby van with a trailer attached to it.
This is my Rhea, Dad.
Danny was proud and pleased to show her off.
Well, you're very welcome.
The man looked old, stooped and shabby. He had worked all his life for his elder and brighter brother, the man who'd given Danny a start in the business. Danny's father was involved in delivering canisters of bottled gas around the countryside. He was about the same age as Barney McCarthy, but he looked a different generation. They drove the 2 miles through narrow roads with high hedges to where Danny had been born. Rhea looked around her, pleased to know his past and the place that had made him, but Danny hardly looked out at all.
Did you have friends living in these places we passed by?
Oh, I knew them, yes, Danny said. I went to school with them.
And when will you meet them? She wanted to know.
They've all gone away. Nearly everyone emigrated, he said.
His mother seemed old, too, much older than Rhea had expected. They had ham and tomatoes, shop bread and a packet of chocolate biscuits. They weren't sure, really, if they could come to Dublin for the wedding. It was a long way, and there might be work here that would be hard to get away from. It was obvious that this was not so, Rhea protested.
It'd be wonderful to have you there for such a big day. We're going to have the reception in Tara Road, and you'll see the new house.
We're not great people for parties, Danny's mother said.
But this is family, Rhea begged.
Yeah, you know, it's a bit rattly in the bus and my back isn't what it was.
Rhea looked at Danny. To her surprise, he wasn't pushing and coaxing as much as she was.
Surely he wanted them there, didn't he? She waited for him to speak.
Ah, go on, come on, can't you? It's only once in a lifetime.
They looked at each other doubtfully.
Now, I know you didn't go to Rich's wedding because that was in London, Danny continued.
But London's much further away than here, and that would have meant planes and boats, Rhea cried. But the Lynches had been thrown the lifebelt they needed, the excuse not to go to the wedding. You see, child, Danny's mother said, clutching Rhea's arm, you see, if we didn't go to the one wedding, it would look like favouring Danny more if we went to the other.
And we'll come up and see the house another time, Danny's father said.
They looked at her hopefully, and there was no more to be said. Of course you will, she said soothingly. And they all smiled, Danny as much as anyone. Did you not want them to come, she asked on the long bus journey home.
Sweetheart, you could see yourself they didn't want to come, he said.
She felt disappointed in him. He should have persuaded them. But then men were different, everyone knew this. After only a week at Polly's, Gertie told her something most unexpected. She told her that as one of the perks of the job, Rhea could rent a wedding dress for herself free. Are you serious? Rhea's face lit up with joy. She'd never have been able to afford anything like this. I tell it to you straight up, Mr. McCarthy's instructions, said Gertie. The whole wedding party is to be kitted out, so choose what you like. Go on, Rhea. It's what he wants. Take it. Danny took a morning suit for himself and his best man. Rosemary chose a slinky silver dress with little pearl buttons. Rhea had a few problems convincing her mother and sister that they should pick something for the day. Come on, Mam Hillary. It's free, for heaven's sake. We'll never get an opportunity like this again, she pleaded. She was nearly there. And why doesn't Martin wear a morning suit, Rhea suggested. He'd look terrific in it. Go on, Hillary, you know he would. And that's what did it. Her mother wore a smart grey dress and jacket with a black feathered hat. Hillary, a wine-coloured suit with pale pink lapels and a huge pink hat. Since there was no outlay on wedding clothes, they paid for a tenor to sing Panis Angelicus and a soprano to sing Ave Maria.